Time to talk another fascinating team. Interesting that we've saved all the good East teams until the end, but they all had some real question marks. That's a big part of why I wanted to save some of these so we had some preseason games under our belt. And no team more prominent among those with that I wanted to see in the preseason than the Toronto Raptors. And joining us now, The Athletic's Blake Murphy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Great. Glad to be back, getting locked in for the season, and really excited to talk about this Raptors team. And obviously the place to start there is Kawhi Leonard. So just individually, how has he looked so far this preseason?
I've been pretty impressed with how he's looked out there. Obviously, there's some rust. He said he hadn't played 5-on-5 since January. And while he's been keeping up with his workouts, clearly, there's only so much you can do to simulate game action. So I thought, he played in the team's first two preseason games. The aggression was still there. The embracing of the physicality, especially on the offensive end, was still there. A couple times he got fouled pretty hard and bounced right back and kept attacking. So there's some rust to work out. The jumper hasn't fallen at his normal clip. His free throw shooting's been off. He hasn't been super locked in defensively. But in terms of attacking and being engaged in the offense and the kind of things you want to see from him from a comfort perspective, all of that's been there so far. And it seems like, it's been a while since he's played now because the Raptors have had this long gap and he sat one game. But it did seem like the offensive chemistry was starting to come along with him and Kyle Lowry a little bit as well.
Yeah, and I think a couple things that haven't looked great so far: the three ball, he's only 1 out of 6, but his misses have not looked great to me. Doesn't look like he's getting a ton of lift. I think he's kind of been short. He's been off left and right with those, but it's 6 shots. I'm not going to panic about it. Then I think he's had a couple of times where he's gotten to the rim where you might have thought, oh, he could have dunked that, and instead he went in for a layup. But he has gotten to the foul line plenty. I mean, he's basically just played like two first halves essentially, right? So, and he's got 19 free throw attempts in that time. Still looks strong. Only 10 out of 19 from the foul line, but that's nothing to worry about there, I assume, either. But his game offensively isn't really as susceptible to this kind of, oh, how does he look athletically analysis, because despite his reputation, he's a guy, he's not like an elite leaper. He's got the great length, he's got great strength. He's more about patiently working to his spots, rising up with that fantastic touch in the mid-range. And so, I think he hasn't looked bad to me. I mean, that's at least a bonus. But I'm not sure that I have the ability to compare him to how he looked in San Antonio based on those first two preseason games and say, all right, he looks better, he looks worse. But he didn't actively look worse, so that's at least a good sign.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned the strength, and the strength is really, I've watched a lot of Kawhi Leonard, but you kind of forget that he can really just kind of put his shoulder down and bully guys to the rim. And you mentioned the free throw volume. The mid-range volume has actually been interesting too, because the Raptors, obviously a big storyline last year was the kind of modernization of their offense, where more of the reins were handed to Nick Nurse, who's now the head coach. Through the first two games, they had only taken about 10% of their field goal attempts as non-paint twos, which would be even fewer than they did last year. And the bulk of those were Kawhi Leonard. And I dug into Ben Falk's great stats at cleaning the glass. And Kawhi Leonard is one of the few guys who, shoots not quite as much from the mid-range as DeMar DeRozan, but a comparable rate of his shots and hits at an even better clip. So it was kind of interesting that, especially early on in the first game, a couple of Leonard's early shots were very DeRozan shots. And in that sense, it almost seemed like he fit in pretty seamlessly.
Yeah, I think he does have that kind of same patient game as DeRozan, but to me, I think he's more capable of creating good mid-range looks up against the best defenders than DeRozan, due to that superior size, strength, and length. And then I think he's got even better touch, and also the fact that he can shoot the three ball off the ball, which DeRozan famously began to embrace to some degree last year. But Kawhi is a very accomplished three-point shooter in an off-ball role, which is kind of how he started his career in San Antonio. So I think it's the one thing I'd say is not as good as DeRozan at is passing. And DeRozan made a lot of strides as a pick and roll player, and DeRozan probably can put a little more pressure on the rim, although neither of those guys are really burners who are going to blow by their man necessarily. But I still like Kawhi as an ISO scorer against the best defenders, maybe late in games as well, in a way that I don't think DeRozan was quite capable of doing against the top echelon guys. Defensively, how has he looked?
He hasn't, it's been tougher to get a feel for him defensively. One, because the Raptors' first game, I don't know if there was some miscommunication. I wasn't in Vancouver for it. I don't know if there was some miscommunication miscommunication or what, but it looked like with the starters in the first half that the edict was to switch a lot of things against Portland, which would make sense in theory, but Nick Nurse said afterward that that was not the plan. And so the guys were kind of, especially, you know, with Kawhi and Danny Green and CJ Miles, 2, 3, 4, they were switching a lot of stuff, and that was leading to some problems, probably just because they don't have the communication down yet. But also he just, you know, I don't think he's really turned it up on that end yet. You've seen a couple possessions where he's gotten his hand on balls that he has no business getting his hand on. And you can kind of see when his man even just makes the catch, the amount that Leonard just naturally encroaches on a ball handler's space. But I don't think he's been super locked in yet. And I don't think, you know, beyond those couple of things that, that Kawhi Leonard could do in his sleep in terms of using his size and just being a presence, you know, I don't think he's really geared up on that end of the floor quite yet. And it's, I'm very much looking forward to Wednesday's game in Montreal against Brooklyn, because that's the one the Raptors are kind of touting as their dress rehearsal. And I'd imagine Nick Nurse, who only estimated the Raptors had about 40% of their defense set in for the first two preseason games, is going to want to see a little bit more of what their in-game regular season defense will look like. And, you know, we might get a better impression then of how Leonard looks on that end in terms of lateral quickness and using that physicality on that end of the floor and just his overall engagement.
So the other big addition that they had, I know Nurse was part of the staff, obviously, but he's now the head coach, and there's talk about how they're taking even fewer of their shots from the mid-range. But anything else that you can glean about what he believes in as a coach, and some early takeaways from just the zeitgeist around the Nick Nurse era?
Yeah, I like everything I'm hearing so far. And when I talked to him in the summer pre-Kawhi Leonard acquisition, there was a lot of talk of experimentation. And a lot of that was born of the mentality that the Raptors know, you know, they could win the way they were with Casey and Lowry and DeRozan. They could win 50 games in their sleep playing the way they play. And they were fairly certain that that didn't work super well in the playoffs, where, you know, multiple years in a row, we'd then seen them scrambling to find new ways to try to win in the playoffs. Nurse's approach was going to be the Raptors are going to try a bunch of different things to see how else they can be good and how else they might be able to be flexible come the postseason. What the Kawhi Leonard DeMar DeRozan trade did was kind of expedite that philosophy from a personnel perspective, where you add in Leonard, who is, you know, the most multifaceted, one of the most multifaceted two-way players in the league. Danny Green, who when he's on is a nice 3-and-D piece. Hopefully he's recovered from the groin tear he played through most of last year. And out goes, you know, your kind of stylistic bottleneck and your toughest one-way piece on the defensive end come playoff time in DeRozan. Again, we don't need to dive into the DeRozan stuff. He was very good for the franchise. He's, you know, an awesome dude, but the defensive limitations were stark come playoff time. So I think there's still going to be a lot of experimentation. He's talked a lot about not using the same starting lineup for 82 games. So they see how they look with Ibaka starting at center or Valanciunas starting as the lone big, or if they can do that pairing a little better. So I think you'll see a lot of that. He's talked a lot about, you know, wanting to try things for like extended looks as well. So if a lineup rolls out there and it does poorly in 4 minutes, well, you know, that might not be a big enough sample for him to decide to throw that out. So I think instead of seeing like last year where the Raptors had one of the highest usage starting lineups and one of the highest usage bench units, you're going to see a lot less time for full five-man units and more experimentation, more plug and play. Related to that, what it's looked like so far is that you'll remember last year the bench mob, as they were called, and the starters played pretty different stylistically. They want to get away from that, and they want to be able to, you know, if Kyle Lowry misses a game, Fred VanVleet or DeLon Wright steps into that role. If they're starting, you know, if they want to see Pascal Siakam instead of OG Anunoby starting at the four, they can make those changes. Greg Monroe, Jonas Valanciunas, Serge Ibaka could all play the backup center minutes with the bench mob and what was formerly Jakob Poeltl's role. So I think they want to be, you know, more uniform in their style of play, and that'll let them get a lot more experimental and versatile in terms of lineup deployment.
Yeah, Nurse, I mean, he coached entire seasons in the G League that were just like his entire goal was to experiment.
Yeah,
in that Houston organization.
Yeah, he told a story on the day of his press conference when he kind of scrummed up after that. At one point, there was kind of just an edict like, hey, you're going to shoot the gap defending this action for like 500 possessions because we want to see what it looks like over a long sample. So I think he is going to bring some of that mentality, and some of that will be with lineups. Some of that might be with defense. The Raptors have been using a fair amount of zone in the preseason. I know a lot of teams experiment with that kind of stuff, but I think you'll see tweaks like that, where they won't be as dogmatic about, you know, what they're doing defensively. They'll probably still have the center drop back, at least when it's Jonas Valanciunas or Greg Monroe in the pick and roll, but they won't be as staunch and rigid about it. And then offensively, you know, it sounds like he wants to have more improvisation, and he wants to give a little bit more freedom to some of the more natural creators that they have in there. And the preseason so far is indicative of that, because, you know, they've run their base sets, and they have a lot of continuity offense that they introduced last year and a little bit the year before. And he's kind of just, you know, he's talked a lot about letting Lowry make the play calls, or letting Leonard create, or Pascal Siakam with the second unit, just letting him run and see what he sees. And maybe that gets reined in later, but I think it's going to be a little more free on that end of the floor too.
I will have much more about this upcoming Raptors season with Blake Murphy right after this. So this honeymoon was a trip of a lifetime. Went for almost a month, stayed in just some fabulous, fabulous hotels, really went all out. But I can report that I still did not sleep nearly as well without my Helix Sleep bed and Helix Sleep pillow, because they are customized to me. If you go to that site, helixsleep.com/capspace, where you can claim up to $125 off all mattress orders. Fill out their 2 to 3 minute sleep quiz, and they use the answers to match your body type and your sleep preferences. Are you a side sleeper, stomach sleeper, back sleeper? Do you sleep too hot? Do you sleep too cold? And give you the perfect mattress. They can even split the mattress down the middle for the individual preferences of a couple. And you don't have to fully take my word for it, because they have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. And I really love their pillow too. It's adjustable for me as a back sleeper. I can never quite find like that right angle for my head where I'm comfortable, but my head isn't too far back that I'm snoring. And so my wife is always happy when we get home and I'm on that Helix Sleep pillow. Once again, the way to get started with them, helixsleep.com/capspace is the URL to get up to $125 off your mattress order. Once again, helixsleep.com/capspace. Easy to remember that /capspace URL. And make sure you include that so they know that you came from us. What about Danny Green? You mentioned him briefly. Haven't had a chance to really lock in on his performance yet, personally, but you think he's looking okay? Is he at least healthy after the groin tear, from what you can tell?
Yeah, he says he's healthy. You know, defensively, it hasn't been there yet, but, you know, this is an experienced vet who probably knows his body well enough to kind of get there and ease into it. He didn't shoot the ball.
When you say it hasn't been there, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, he just hasn't. He hasn't looked good on that end. I mentioned kind of the over-reliance on switching in the first preseason game there. He got just straight up beat on the perimeter a couple times in their second preseason game. You know, I'm sure that'll come along. Right now, he looks maybe a touch slow. I'm not sure if that's a conditioning thing or just getting the comfort back with the groin. But then offensively, in the games, his three ball hasn't dropped a ton. They had an open scrimmage the other day. I was out of town for it, but apparently every three he took was falling. So I don't really worry about him being anything less than an average three-point shooter. But I guess if the defense didn't come back, and it's a little hard to project because, you know, he's been so good defensively, but he's also in his early 30s and he's coming off this groin tear. There's at least a chance that he doesn't get back to that level defensively. And with the depth that the Raptors have, both at the guard position and across the wing, that'll be, you know, an interesting thing to watch. I think his role is fairly secure to start the season, but there is so much depth there that if his defense does slide, that opens up some questions.
Yeah, and Green, it was really on the defensive end, I thought, where he took a big step back last year. Again, that could have been health-related, but he is someone who's suffered through a lot of nagging injuries over the last few years. And mm-hmm. You know, Toronto has a good medical staff, as do the Spurs, in theory. But the good news for these guys is they have a ton of other options. So who are looking like the starters at this point, to the extent you can even tell with the amount of experimentation done?
Yeah, it's hard. So I originally thought that the most common starting lineup this year, understanding that they're going to tweak it, would probably be Lowry, Green, Leonard, Anunoby, and Valanciunas. To me, you know, Ibaka makes a little bit more sense off the bench in a lot of matchups, allowing for the fact that they were going to start him there sometimes. And the Raptors' depth kind of just plays a little better that way. The complicating factors here being that Anunoby has missed all of training camp so far. He just returned to the team yesterday after a personal matter kept him out for the the bulk of it. So we haven't seen what that looks like. You know, CJ Miles has started the preseason games. I really don't think that's going to happen when the season gets going. The way it looks right now, Ibaka has started more often than Valanciunas at the 5-2. So I do think more often than not, they will start small-ish. And by small, I don't necessarily mean with a small center, but kind of four around a center. That's Leonard and Anunoby at the 3-4, maybe Siakam in some looks, and then Ibaka and Valanciunas kind of bouncing back and forth in that center role. I don't think we've seen the last of Ibaka-Valanciunas as a duo, but it'll probably be minimized from here. You know, Nurse has talked about having six starters, those being Lowry, Green, Leonard, Anunoby, Ibaka, and Valanciunas, and wanting to mix those up. I think probably Siakam is even in that conversation too, as long as, you know, some of the offensive stuff people are excited about comes along a little bit.
Yeah, and they still have a ton of other options too. You Siakam certainly, you know, as a four, maybe even a five. Norm Powell still probably capable. He had a nice game the other day before having to leave with a minor injury. You know, but he's capable of stepping in. And then they also have in the backcourt Wright and Van Vliet. Both of those guys have successfully played at the two. Van Vliet was in the closing lineup a lot of time. And while you might say, well, a lot of what they can do is switch with this team, and that's the big appeal. Van Vliet is a little bit better at that, so depending on the matchup, you might be able to get away with him, and he gets maybe one more shooter on the floor. So they've got a lot of ability to mix and match. You know, if the other team has big wings, maybe you leave Green and Leonard and Anunoby all out there at the same time, and maybe you even go Siakam at the five, and then Lowry is still a bulldog in the post if you need to switch there. And if we talk about a closing lineup for this team, Lowry and Leonard, you would think, are certain to be out there, but I'm not certain that anyone else is necessarily.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you just, you know, you kind of made the case for Van Vliet and Wright. And I was going to make that point as well, that even I don't necessarily see either of them starting, just because you want those dual ball handlers in the second unit where there's a little less playmaking. Even if Siakam, you know, comes along, I think you'd still like those two guys playing off each other. But closing lineup wise, you know, the Raptors have always played a lot of 2-point guard ball, and Van Vliet, you mentioned Lowry being a bulldog. You know, Van Vliet has done well chasing two guards who are off ball specialists. Him and Lowry can kind of change, you know, be a little versatile between the two guard spots. And then DeLon Wright, we even saw him guard some true wings last year at times. So those guys are right in the mix as well, depending on the playmaking need. But yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, we mentioned the six potential starters. You could throw Siakam, Van Vliet, and Wright in there as well. And I don't really think you can go wrong with a fivesome there. You mentioned Siakam at center. It doesn't sound like we're going to see a lot of that early. They haven't really practiced a lot like that yet, from what it sounds like. But that's obviously interesting. Against some bigger teams, you know, you look ahead to maybe playoff matchups against certain Boston lineups or certain Philadelphia lineups. I'm kind of intrigued by Leonard, Anunoby, and Siakam, not just as a 3-4-5, but as a 2-3-4 maybe on defensive-oriented possessions, just where you have that switchability, but you still have all that positional size. You know, that obviously depends on Siakam's 3-point shot coming along a little bit. But yeah, there are a lot of fun options here. And I don't think you've seen the last of Valanciunas getting occasional closing games too, especially where you can swing the rebounding battle a little bit.
Well, and with the amount of shooting that they project to have now, I think he can really kill people offensively,
right?
You know, as a role man, you know, I've never really cared for him as a deep post-up guy. I think he just doesn't quite get good, or I'm sorry, not as a straight post-up guy, I should say, because he doesn't really get the greatest position. It seems like they always turn it over trying to get it into him. I mean, there are plenty of people who have always been calling for him to get more post-ups late in games, but it just seems like they can never get him the ball. And then, you know, I don't think he's the greatest passer there either. But as a pick and roll guy, offensive rebounding as well, if teams are going to try to go small to contain them, you know, you could see maybe, especially if the other team doesn't have a real crucial pick and roll threat who can pull up in the mid-range or pull up from three. And there's not a ton of those in the Eastern Conference. Then, you know, do I want him defending Kyrie Irving in the pick and roll late in games? No, but, you know, against like a Philly, I think he maybe does make more sense.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you mentioned his post-up game, and his post-up scoring actually came back up last year. He had two kind of down years, and his volume was very low, but he was in the 92nd percentile for post scoring on a per possession basis. And he's improved, you know, he's taken small strides as a playmaker. And interestingly, I was having a conversation with Greg Monroe today at practice about how the one thing, you know, I was asking Monroe basically whether Nick Nurse has kind of taken some Monroe things and introduced them to the offense, like maybe a couple of corner offense sets where Monroe is facilitating a little bit more than the Raptors centers traditionally have. And he was saying no, but they have, you know, messed around with some post-up designed to get, you know, to pass from the post. And they've, in the first couple games, you've seen a couple of instances of split cuts over top of a post-up, which seems really simple, but it's not something the Raptors have done very frequently the last few years. And I think that's contributed to Valanciunas's turnover problems on post-ups, because he is very, you know, he uses the left block more than three quarters of the time every season. And if a guy can dig down from the top, you know, you mentioned he's not a great passer out of there. But if they have a little bit more going on around that, and Valanciunas takes a little bit of a stride as a passer, to your point, I think that makes him even more playable in more matchups, because you can get him involved in more ways offensively to kind of tilt any size advantage you have there and keep him around the rim.
Yeah, somewhat apropos of this, Liam pulled this stat that last year, obviously with DeRozan in most of these lineups, you would think, with no traditional center on the floor, so no Valanciunas, no Jakob Poeltl, no Bebe, 12.2 net rating and defensive rating 97.8. So best in the league style of defense. You know, so that's probably, you've got Ibaka or Siakam at center in those lineups. And, you know, if you've got Kawhi, you've got Danny Green. I mean, I really expect this team to defend incredibly well. But before we get there, if you had to just pick what you think the best closing lineup is for this team, what would you pick?
Yeah, I'd probably, you know, in a vacuum, assuming relatively average opponents, I think right now it's probably Lowry, Van Vliet, Leonard, Anunoby, and Valanciunas. The Valanciunas Ibaka would obviously be kind of a coin flip depending on who the alternate center is. But I've always liked the way the Lowry, Van Vliet duo looks, and then that switchability over the wing. I think they would probably lean toward a third wing there instead of a second guard. But I like the amount of shooting and playmaking you have on the floor there, and kind of that you give up a little bit of size, but not so much the defensive toughness on the perimeter. Assuming, you know, Lowry's defensive individual perimeter defensive metrics weren't great last year. So that assumes those are going to come up a little bit. I don't know why I'm assuming that when a guy's 32, but you know, that was a down year for him defensively. So I that's probably what I'd pencil in right now, but kind of as we talked, you can go a lot of different ways with that.
Yeah, certainly longtime listeners who know my proclivities for wanting to go smaller switch would say, hey, Siakam at center could be interesting. You could even maybe even think about Anunoby at center with the amazing wing depth that they have on this team. You know, that would be my inclination, but you know, I think they really are going to have to experiment throughout the year, you know, and we'll see. You know, is Danny Green the Green that he was for most of his career in San Antonio, or is he in another place now where he's really more of a backup type of player and he can't keep up with the quickest guys defensively? You know, CJ Miles, I think, you know, is clearly their best shooter. He's got a lot of gravity, but you know, if you're going against Giannis or LeBron James, I mean, we've seen how he's just gotten completely trucked anytime they just do a small pick and roll to get him onto someone like that. So you know, he can't play at the end of games against guys of that ilk as well. You know, Siakam, how far along does his defensive game, or I'm sorry, his offensive game come? I mean, I think he really still, unless he can shoot a little bit better, is probably best cast as a center offensively. So that's part of why I like him there, because to get him on the floor as a power forward, then you're probably going to be suffering from a shooting standpoint. And then, you know, how does Ibaka look as well? You know, I mean, he's one guy I really wanted to talk to you about, because he got that 3-year, $65 million contract, which didn't look like a great value last season. You know, it's always swirled that whether it's because of Miles or because he's older than advertised, you know, I mean, I think this is his age 28 year, but he certainly has been on a much more severe aging curve than that number would indicate. So what are you expecting to see out of him this year? I think he's a key figure because, you know, he's making a lot of money. In theory, is going to play, and he's a proud guy. So what do you think of his outlook this season?
Yeah, he's an interesting, almost philosophical exercise, because if you can get past the sunk cost of his contract, because I don't think that's movable, it's a negative asset value at this point. If you can get past that, he's still a useful player. He wasn't terrible last year. He didn't have a very good playoffs, but over the course of the whole season, he was serviceable. The issues were obviously he's overpaid, and he's under, since he was acquired, he's kind of been treated like the third third star instead of the, you know, best of the role players. And by that, I don't mean, you know, he doesn't get star treatment in the media or anything like that. But, you know, he was relatively assured of a closing spot in most close games. His starting spot was rarely in question, even as his performance waned. So I think a shift away from that could do him well, whether that means coming off the bench a little bit more or just playing in different roles. I think playing more center, which it absolutely looks like he's going to do, is really going to suit him. I think at this point, keeping him closer to the rim is probably preferable to him chasing guys around. I think the days of him being a three position defender are gone. That's probably 1.5 to 2 at this point. And the nice thing in the preseason so far has been that he's rebounded really well playing at that center spot. And that's been a concern in the past because he's not an elite rebounder. And that would be my concern with, you know, I love the idea of Siakam at center, and your Ananobi at center lineup has me drooling. Both of those guys would obviously have to get better as rebounders to do that for more than a show me look. But Ibaka, I mean, it should agree with him playing center more often. And when he's at center, you know, you can do a lot of stuff on the wing, and you can have a Siakam out there at the four because Ibaka's providing that spacing from the five that you'd normally get from the four. And he is still a good pick and pop threat. He has that, you know, 17 footer that's, you know, he was one of the best mid-range shooters on high volume in the entire NBA last year. So I don't know. I'm not optimistic that Serge Ibaka bounces back to Oklahoma City levels of Serge Ibaka, but I am optimistic that used a little smarter, Ibaka can kind of reestablish himself as a very useful, you know, role player within this team concept outside of the fact that, you know, he's overpaid and he's going to remain overpaid this year and next.
Yeah, I think the weaknesses that he has, you know, one is a declining level of lateral quickness, you know, going back to where he was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and especially the demands on switching defenders are even higher than they were back in those days in Oklahoma City. And then the decision making offensively, which, you know, 2 years ago, and then I think even last year, there's hope that during the season they had empowered him a little bit more and they wanted him to put the ball on the floor. And then I thought in the Cleveland series, it was just as bad as it always was, either, you know, shooting the ball the moment it hits his hands or just kind of catching the ball, having a ton of space in front of him, but not realizing it, and then traveling or, you know, throwing a pass to someone who wasn't open instead of taking the advantage. You know, so we'll see if they can just make him, if they have enough offensive threats where they can just have him go stand on the wing or the corner and shoot threes. You know, I think I like his role better in the playoffs and at the end of games. And then I think, you know, it's been a very long time since he's had the chance to just operate as a traditional rim protector in maybe a more conventional pick and roll defense style. So maybe he can be more effective that way. I do think of him as a little bit of a weak link at the end of games. I think as a starting center, it's okay. You want to go with a more traditional look, space the floor, but I think he does have some weaknesses that can be exploited late or in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I had Valanciunas in my theoretical average closing lineup. You know, hopefully, I think the team would hope that Siakam can play some of those as well, to your point, maybe a little later in the year. But yeah, Ibaka, and what you said about him being, you know, a capable starter, but maybe not a fit to close games all the time, kind of goes back to what I said about just using him smarter and not treating him like that third guy who is assured of those closing minutes or a starting job for 82 games or a certain number of green lights every time the ball touches his hand at the elbow. But so, you know, obviously that's going to be one of Nick Nurse's first challenges, and that's going to be not just an Ibaka thing. They've got 12 guys who are used to playing, you know, significant-ish minutes in a rotation, and there's not enough room for all of that right now. So whether it's Ibaka and managing his closing role, or if Valanciunas comes off the bench, or if Greg Monroe is out of the rotation at some points, I think that's one of the biggest challenges. You know, I don't have very many doubts about Nick Nurse, the basketball man. What we've never seen from him, and it's not fair to assume he can't do it, or safe to assume he can, is manage that, you know, the egos and the personalities over 82 games when guys are in and out of roles that they're, you know, they've been accustomed to.
Yeah, and you throw in the impending free agency of Kawhi Leonard, the fact that he is just overall kind of a quiet guy, and that Dwayne Casey so excelled with managing the personalities. That might have been his greatest strength as a coach, you know, what he was able to get about out of Kyle Lowry, DeRozan, you know, I mean, those guys, especially Lowry, not the easiest in the world to deal with. Is there still anything being made of this whole, oh, Lowry, like, you know, wasn't in touch with the front office after DeRozan got traded? Is that in the rearview mirror now, or are people still concerned about that? You know,
I thought, him kind I I thought it was a little overstated in the first place. Yeah. You know, the impression that I got heading into the offseason was that Lowry was aware that changes needed to happen and changes were coming. And he's a smart enough and competitive enough person from the basketball side to absolutely understand the situation. I think part of it, you know, I think this all goes a lot differently or is perceived a lot differently if that USA basketball stuff doesn't happen. And, you know, that wasn't really the fault of Lowry necessarily.
For those who don't remember, what USA basketball stuff are you referring
to? Okay, so shortly after the trade, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan were both at USA basketball camp in Las Vegas. Lowry was doing media availability, basically said, no, I will not talk about the trade, largely because his best friend is standing right over there and he can't really, you know, Lowry's in a tough spot then where he can't really say he's against the trade because that'll cause trouble with Kawhi Leonard right out of the gate, but he also can't really celebrate the trade or say anything positive about it because from a friend perspective, the wounds are still fresh for DeRozan, and DeRozan obviously felt like he was not treated in the most respectful way as all that was going down. So Lowry said he wasn't going to talk about it, and then he just got asked about it a bunch of times and gave non-answers, which gave the impression without the proper context that he was unhappy about it, which, you know, if DeRozan wasn't handled the best, maybe Lowry was a little unhappy with it. But from a basketball perspective, I think, you know, Lowry's discontent with this has been overstated, or we're kind of looking at tea leaves that aren't really there. He's a smart and hyper-competitive dude. There's no way he doesn't know that this is good for him and good for the team.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess we'll see whether it is if, you know, Kawhi stays healthy and, you know, I mean, obviously I was in favor of the trade, but you know, if he gets hurt and then leaves, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been, but
sure.
Yeah, certainly changes needed to be made. I think that's, although, I mean, it's so funny that like every year would be, oh, we had this great regular season and then, you know, they would end up again, just with the playoff disappointment, but they always felt like they were taking steps forward every year in the regular season until they would just get trucked by LeBron. what about on the floor for Lowry? You know, this is going to be age 32 for him, as you mentioned, has aged, I think, pretty darn well, you know, certainly in the on-off metrics, you know, hasn't taken much of a step back. You mentioned the defense isn't what it was, which that's always going to be the case. They have plenty of good backups for him, though, so they can protect him in terms of minutes. He only played 32 minutes a game last year, but can he maintain this level of performance again this year? Are you expecting a step back? Because that's potentially a weakness for this team, is the second star, even if they get what they can out of Kawhi, you know, is Lowry still capable of being that number two option?
Yeah, I think he is. I don't think I don't think there's enough evidence yet beyond the general point guard aging curves that Lowry has taken a step back. You know, you look at whatever impact stat you prefer, on off, player impact, plus minus, whatever. Lowry was still very much Kyle Lowry last year. A slow start to the year, and by his own admission, it took him some time to get used to the ball being in his hand less. I think that's actually going to come back the other way a little bit this year. The reason the ball was in his hand less last year was because with the move to a more Nick Nurse run offense, DeRozan not being a spacing threat kind of hampered things a little bit. So if you put the ball in DeRozan's hand more, Lowry, who is an elite shooter, is then off the ball more. So I think he'll pair better with Kawhi Leonard. You know, I think he's going to have the ball a little bit more to operate in the pick and roll, to start possessions where he's the best creator on the team for others. And then, you know, when Leonard goes to work, Lowry's still going to have those off-ball opportunities. I think Nurse too is probably going to empower him to pull up off the dribble even more. John Schumann had a stat this summer that of guys over the last 3 years with, I think, 300 pull-up attempts more. Lowry has the best percentage in basketball over that time. So Nurse has talked about, I think his term was putting the ball in Lowry's belly more often, and getting him to kind of run the first unit offense. So I think offensively it's going to be fine. There's just a lot of shooting and talent between him and Leonard. And you know, the kind of chemistry that should be there and symbiosis with two guys who can play off the ball as much as they can play on it, should really help. Defensively is where my concern lies more, because as much as Lowry is still a bulldog and draws a ton of charges and rebounds very well for a diminutive guard, his perimeter defense man-to-man slid last year. And, you know, that's probably the biggest concern about the defense, at least in certain lineup iterations where there's not a ton of rim protection. You know, Ibaka's the only guy who figures to play big minutes at center that protects the rim in a traditional sense. Valanciunas and Monroe don't do that quite as much. So if that, you know, if he's getting beat a lot on the perimeter, that's probably a bigger concern to me than what his offense will look like.
Yeah, and I think he's probably better as a switch guy now where it always surprised me when late in games, if the Raptors were switching, teams would always try to post up Kyle Lowry instead of DeRozan. I'm like, no, you got it wrong. Post up DeMar DeRozan. He is not going to try, and you'll be able to go right through him. Like, I mean, I remember 2 years ago, like the Warriors tried to like ISO KD in the post on Lowry, and Lowry actually like stopped him pretty good. And so, you know, I mean, obviously he's 6 feet tall. He's not going to just be a stopper down there, but, you know, I mean, he can fight pretty hard. And we've seen other teams be able to get away with switching systems, like the Warriors when you have Steph Curry. I think, you know, Lowry's probably better on switches than Curry is. But yeah, if he's not able to get over screens at the point of attack, that's a little bit of an issue. But I think now with DeRozan there, he had to guard the best guy on the other team. There really wasn't an option. But now with Kawhi, Danny Green, even Anunoby, you can hide Lowry on a relative non-threat. So if you're playing a more conventional style, he's got a lot less pressure on him this year than in past years.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I don't want to be negative about DeRozan, but when you remove a guy like that who had to be game planned as much with on the defensive end, that does open up a lot for a guy like Lowry, or, you know, even with your lineup combinations. Like last year against Cleveland, the Raptors had DeRozan, Miles, and Valanciunas on the floor together at some points. And it was just like I got it. You only had 8 or 9 guys that you trusted in the rotation at that point, but that's a lot of issues on the floor at once. And if you take one of those away and your team is more flush with not only versatile defenders, but just guys who can do some things at both ends of the floor, so that you're not, you know, this team doesn't have really anyone you figure to be able to give the Tony Allen treatment to. And then defensively, there's no one that figures to close anyway that you can just really attack like that. So I think that'll help. And yeah, it's specifically with Lowry, whether he's out there with Green or Van Vliet, or if they're super big and Leonard's there, he can kind of take the, you know, you almost, like you said, dare someone to take him into the post, put him on a bigger guy stationed in the corner where he can kind of do his ball hawk things where he's poking balls free, or he slides over in help to try to draw those charges. Or maybe you bait an opponent into slowing things down and clearing out for a post up. I think there are more options if he does decline in terms of how to hide him and how to manage that. He could also just be better, but, you know, a 32-year-old point guard who's taken a beating the last couple of years, I'm not sure I want to bet on his individual defense just taking a step up. But within the team concept, for sure, you can work around that a lot better now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, really, the shooting has not declined at all. No. It's just the usage, the ability to get to the basket and finish. He actually used to be a great finisher for his size. That's really no longer the case now. Getting to the foul line, he took a step back there also. I think he's kind of hurt a little bit by some of the rules changes. He was one of the best at like drawing those bullshit fouls on the perimeter, which he still gets some of, but, you know, that's been a little bit of an emphasis to reduce those type of calls. Going a little out of order here, but what do you see as kind of the key questions that, you know, we've hit on a few, obviously Kawhi's health and Danny Green, but anything else that you're looking at as kind of the big variables for this team this year?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Leonard stuff is going to hang over everything, and I think the question of how they can manage around that and block out that noise is a big question. I think more bigger picture, it's going to be maybe a little tough to figure out just how much these young guys can grow, because everyone's role is kind of going to be the same. So you look and like Pascal Siakam probably has the widest range of positive outcomes of any of the young guys this year. But if he's operating in the same role, you know, at what point do you kind of pull the trigger on expanding that? Or if Anunoby looks better, at what point do you pull the trigger on expanding that? And it kind of goes back to my point earlier about how Nurse is going to manage 12 guys who want, you know, top 9 minutes and top 9 role. There are just kind of a lot of like soft questions like that about how everything's going to fit once things start to matter and once adversity strikes, because there are, you know, everything looks good on paper and everything feels good in training camp, but once they hit a losing streak, or once there's a report about Kawhi wanting out, or, you know, once Norman Powell or Greg Monroe goes a week and a half without playing, that's when these kind of questions come up after you've had such a tumultuous offseason with so much change. On the court, there are probably fewer concerns, because again, on paper they look quite good. They should have a lot of shooting and push for, you know, top 5 in the league in 3-pointers made probably. They should push for a top 5 defense. Maybe rebounding is a bit of a concern, because they do figure to play with Serge Ibaka at the 5, maybe even Pascal Siakam at the 5 some, and they don't have, you know, the wings that they do have aren't the strongest rebounding wings. So that's probably the biggest like on court concern that I would have, is that some of their best lineups are a little weak on the glass. But yeah, I think it's more going to be this softer stuff of how do they manage manage it over 82 games where they've been so stable for 82 games. And now they need to get out of that comfort zone, not only with the roster turnover and the coaching change, but in how they're going to approach this year. And I realize that's a kind of a weird answer because it's also intangible. But I think especially with the way the Raptors seasons have gone the last couple years, you kind of do have to dig in the intangible because, you know, everything has worked so well in the regular season and clicked. And then, you know, it doesn't work come playoff time. So you kind of have to peek and try to glean from these smaller things, you know, how they respond to adversity and things like that, which is weird because that's a super hard to analyze from outside. And it's going to look good when things are going great. And then, you know, you only know chemistry by its absence, really. So it's kind of a weird spot to be in terms of evaluating the big questions they face.
Yeah, I think maybe the other question that I have, and these are somewhat interrelated, is, you know, can they just replace DeRozan's usage? I mean, this was the number two offense in the NBA last year. But Kawhi, actually, I mean, DeRozan was 29.6 usage last year, a little bit lower than it had been. In his last healthy year, Kawhi was 31 and 26 the year before that. But, you know, he was, if he is back at that level, then I don't think they really have many problems there. I think you might look at passing as potentially a little bit of a weakness on this team. You know, Lowry is a solid passer, but, you know, he's not really getting the level of penetration to draw the defense and set guys up the way he might have earlier in his career. You know, people have raved a lot about Siakam's passing, but, you know, is he your second best passer on the team,
Van Vliet? Yeah, we need to see a bit more of that.
Okay. Yeah, and maybe Van Vliet is the solution there, you know, especially getting them to play more in transition to, you know, pushing the pace. I think, like, between Leonard and Lowry, they're probably not really guys who are going to push the ball as much as maybe Nurse might like. And the beauty of Van Vliet is, you know, he's not going to finish at the rim, but he is a good pick and roll operator. He can get penetration, Nash under the rim, try to find guys. And then in contrast to when you had DeRozan before, you've got Lowry and Leonard are both excellent off ball players as well from a shooting standpoint. So maybe that would be a thought on why Van Vliet might play a little bit more to give but overall playmaking, and, you know, they might just be still a little bit light on playmakers and decision makers. And then you also would wonder, you know, where the shooting of Ananobi and Siakam, you know, that's another thing. Like, Ananobi shot great, but a lot of that was from the corners. Didn't shoot it amazingly well in summer league, and, you know, it's not really a natural shooter. You know, when he was shooting 44% for half the year, you knew that was a little bit of fool's gold, and he didn't have a ton of volume. I mean, his usage was only 13% last year. I mean, you go down this list and there's a lot of guys who are really below average usage. And so Kawhi, if he's healthy, can fill a lot of that. But, you know, you do wonder if, especially if they really put the pressure on Kawhi and Lowry at the end of games in the playoffs, are these other guys going to be able to step up to some degree?
Yeah, it's almost a 2015-16 Raptors problem. It's, you know, if they're going to trap and get the ball out of their hands, are there enough guys that can put it on the floor, attack a closeout, make the next right play? And, you know, again, they're saying the right things and they're trying that stuff in the preseason. And Greg Monroe is maybe a guy who can help, but obviously I don't think he's going to play big closing minutes or heavy minutes in a playoff series. They're trying to extend Valanciunas and Ibaka's utility there. Miles and Green are not really guys that you want, you know, creating for themselves or others very much. Miles looks pretty bouncy to start this year, at least relative to last year where he was kind of slow to get going and never got out of it. But, you know, neither of those guys you really want operating the pick and roll or anything like that. So I am with you. And, you know, I think having 3 point guards helps that. DeLon Wright isn't the shooter that Fred VanVleet or Kyle Lowry are, but, you know, creatively and in terms of finding that second guard when they're playing two guards. And you mentioned the transition game. Hit the rate at which he helped force live ball turnovers last year relative to pretty much anyone else that was driving that stat on the team was pretty extreme. So, you know, he'll help in that regard as well. So I'm with you that that's probably a weakness if we're putting kind of a cap on what we expect from Siakam's growth in that role, particularly in the half court. So yeah, between that and rebounding, I think usage wise, they'll probably be able to figure it out. Leonard's going to take a lot of that, it looks like. And then Lowry's usage was, you know, Lowry's usage could come back up. He was around 20% last year, so that could come back up as well.
You know, I think so much of it gets back to Leonard here. I mean, I think even if not all of these pieces that they have great seasons, I think they have enough guys that, you know, they're going to be able to get some really good five-man units out there on the floor. But, you know, is Kawhi Leonard, you know, I was talking to an executive the other day, said, you know, when we were thinking about maybe trying to acquire him, that, you know, we kind of had projected him as a top 15 15 player in the league this year instead of top five the way he was. And, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a step back on defense. But even more importantly to me, you know, we talked about this idea of the decision making and, you know, could they deal with double teams if those happen? Well, you know, we're talking about double teaming on the pick and roll 35 feet from the basket, right? That's what they struggle to deal with. If you're talking about, you know, Kawhi Leonard doesn't need a screen. He, at his best, he's able to just go and bully guys in the post. And, I, you know, Greg Popovich wouldn't usually do like kind of the small pick and roll stuff to get a matchup for him. But if Nurse decides to go that route as well, you know, I think that can be really effective. But, you know, is Kawhi going to be a guy who can just kind of create shots, or is he going to really be able to bully guys and be unstoppable and be that 30% usage, 61% true shooting guy that he was 2 years ago on a Spurs team that had far less spacing and far less of a modern offensive approach than I anticipate this Raptors team going to? I mean, if he's 100%, like, he could just have a monster year, but he's going to have to be 100%.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to be reasonable about this, all of this, and temper my expectations. But yeah, I went back and watched a lot of Kawhi Leonard from 2015-16 and 2016-17 this summer. And he is, like, I don't know if it was the injury or the drama or what, but he was really good. And people kind of seem to have not forgotten it. But, you know, you mentioned that, well, what if he's top 15 instead of top five? For those two seasons, he was maybe top two, top three.
Yeah.
It's really exciting to think on what, you know, what the 100th percentile or even 80th percentile outcome looks like for the Raptors here at both ends of the floor. You know, more reasonably, okay, what if Leonard's 85 to 90% of what he was before? That's still, you know, that probably puts him as the second best player in the East behind Giannis instead of the best player in the East. But, you know, he's still right there, and the Raptors figure to have the best player in most playoff series, which is something that they've almost never had during this run. So it's really exciting. And to think, you know, you obviously can't let yourself assume that Leonard is going to be 100% of Leonard, but it's certainly fun to think about as someone who's going to get to watch him for 82 games and watch closely how he operates on both ends of the floor for this team.
To me, the concern is more with the chronic nature of this injury. How is he going to be in January? Is this going to flare up again? Because, you know, it seems like the type of thing where, you know, there wasn't necessarily an acute injury. You know, some people went back to like a thigh bruise that he had, but, you know, it's a chronic condition. And, you know, does it get aggravated by the usage as opposed to, all right, he's just not back? I'm more concerned about, you know, how many games is he going to be able to play? Are they going to have to manage it? Is it just the type of thing where, okay, it was great, you know, you mentioned he hadn't played 5-on-5 since January. You know, it was great while he was ramping up his workouts and not really putting stress on it in game conditions, but now that he's out there, is it going to kind of start to bother him again? You know, because he didn't have like a surgery to fix it necessarily. It was just a ton of rehab, and, you know, hopefully that works for him. But you wonder a little bit about, you know, what is his kind of longevity going to be this season? And I assume they're going to be very careful managing him on back-to-backs. You know, they have so many other backups for him, and, you know, they've pushed really hard in previous seasons to get home court, and, you know, that doesn't seem to help him that much in the playoffs for whatever reason. So I do think they'll kind of be taking it a little easier and, you know, just trust in their bench to be really good, as I think it will be and as it has been. Any other big strengths or weaknesses pop out to you that we haven't talked about yet?
No, not necessarily. And just to your point about Leonard, yeah, we talked about the Raptors' depth, especially on the wing, so much. And, you know, I think it probably is going to help in that regard that the Raptors already started trying to transition to a more long-term focused minute management last year, where DeRozan's minutes were down to the lowest they've been since he was a rookie. Lowry's minutes were down into the low 30s. You look at Leonard, he's never played more than 74 games, and he's never averaged more than 33 minutes. So, you know, the Raptors are going to be able to manage that pretty well. And I don't think it'll be, you know, you worry sometimes with a superstar, okay, well, is he going to be cool playing only 32 minutes and taking 10 nights off on back-to-backs to rest? Leonard's always kind of played at that kind of a workload. So I hope that works out in that regard. The only other thing that I think, you know, is an interesting subplot, and it's kind of a, I don't know if it's one that'll come up, but the Raptors are deep into the tax. And I do wonder a little bit if at some point during the season, you know, if Norman Powell or CJ Miles look expendable but still have trade value, you know, do they flip them off for another big or another guy who can play 4 or 5 and maybe makes a little bit less? That's a smaller consideration, because if they're making the finals, MLSE has deep enough pockets that they won't care about that tax bill. But it is kind of something that before the Leonard Leonard trade, it certainly looked like they were going to try to shed salary. And I wonder a little bit if that has any impact on rotation decisions and you know, extending it to 11 or 12 early to see what Norman Powell has, or to let him push CJ Miles for that role or something like that. That's the only really kind of, not even a B plot, like kind of a C plot that might play out between now and February, because I don't think they're in a position to make any too splashy a move. They made their splashy move. They got Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there's been a willingness to trade future picks for this team, although they are encumbered mm-hmm. now to where the first one they could trade would be 2021, since they got that 19 pick that went to the Spurs in the Leonard trade. Yeah. And I think they would love to move Powell, you know, making 9.3 this year. But he is, 4 years, $42 million. He got that Josh Richardson extension. And I think he could help a team, but, you know, the only team that has the space to just straight up absorb him right now is the Kings, and they've got $1.2 billion guards. I don't know that they necessarily would be interested in him. So I think maybe what we need to talk about more with this team, we haven't even maybe hit on enough, is just, I think this team's defense is going to be unbelievable. I mean, if you just go down the roster, you have a few great defenders. So, you know, Ananobi has the potential to be great. Green has been great in the past. You've got Kawhi, obviously, who is absolutely fantastic. Siakam, you know, maybe can't defend LeBron James one-on-one, but he's been excellent as well. Ibaka, I think, can be a quality defensive center. I mean, really, your only guys in the rotation who don't project to be at least solid defensively are CJ Miles and Valanciunas, and then maybe Monroe to the extent that he plays. So, I mean, they can just put, especially at the end of games that they're switching, I think, and there aren't a ton of just amazing one-on-one creators in the East, too. I think this team could just be an absolute monster. I mean, I would be surprised. I almost guarantee they'll be a top five defense, and I'd be surprised if they weren't top three, and maybe even, you know, right up there with Boston, Utah, and Philly. I mean, and then Toronto. I think those are pretty clearly to me the four best regular season defenses in the NBA this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. And, you know, I probably, maybe Utah has the edge heading in, but yeah, those top three teams in the East are going to be really good defensively. And you mentioned, you know, the East not having a lot of, you know, super unique creators. Well, the two guys you'd probably worry about are Embiid and Giannis, and not that there is such.
I think Irving you could put in that category.
Yeah, too. That's true. And you know, Irving, maybe the play is to throw size at him, which the Raptors can do with a lot of switchability. I'm not sure if there's a good answer for Kyrie Irving, but Giannis, you know, there's no such thing as a Giannis stopper. Like, there's no LeBron stopper, but you have the one guy who would theoretically stand the best chance to slow them down, and Kawhi Leonard, and then a couple other guys you can throw at him. And then Embiid, you know, Embiid really had Valanciunas' number in the regular season last year, and I think he'd maybe bully Ibaka, but I don't, you know, I think they would match up okay. And if you look ahead, which the Raptors are surely doing, to playoff series with Philly and or Boston, the fact that they can play both kind of ways, I think, and still project as pretty good defensively, has to be pretty encouraging for them, because, you know, like you said, there are almost no bad defenders in the rotation, and it would be hard to come up with a fivesome that could realistically play that wouldn't at least be solid on that end. And then you can mix and match pieces for Boston or Philly, or, you know, in the event another team takes a step in the East. But I think those are the two big ones that the Raptors are probably focused on and worried about. And I think that's part of why they'll change the starting lineups up a little bit in their closing lineups, to see, you know, obviously you only get to play those teams four times each, but to see how different groups that might work against an Embiid Simmons look, you know, especially if Philly throws size with Covington and Sarge with those guys, or a Boston look where Horford's at the five and they're a little smaller and wing heavy like the Raptors. They're going to experiment with a lot of that. And it's, man, the Atlantic Division on a serious come up now, where it's
the Atlantic Division. Yeah, it used to suck.
Yeah, it's the Atlantic Division and the rest of the East.
Terrible for a long time. Well, don't worry. The East still has the Central and the Southeast Division. The Southeast Division is just a graveyard.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, and it's not even that, like, there's that many terrible teams. I mean, there's probably could be three playoff teams out of the Southeast, but just like overall, it's like hopeless franchises. You know, just have no chance of winning an NBA championship anytime soon in the Southeast. But that is not the point of this podcast. So we'll do predictions here with Blake right after this.
You must love hoops if you're enjoying another great episode of Dunked On. The Locked On Podcast Network has more hoops for you. Locked On has a podcast on every NBA team. If you're a Lakers fan, a Bucks fan, a Celtics fan, or a Mavericks fan, the Locked On Podcast Network has a daily podcast on your favorite team. All 30 NBA teams have a daily podcast at Locked On. Search on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts for Locked On, Your Favorite Team, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, Your Favorite Team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Give me your predicted regular season record and predicted postseason finish for the Toronto Raptors.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to say 57 regular season wins. I might be assuming too much health for Kawhi Leonard with that number. But we just talked about how good their defense figures to be. They have depth in the event of a non-major injury to one of their two stars. Especially if Lowry needs to sit game. Or they need to rest guys on back-to-back. They have the depth to do that kind of stuff. I think their over-under is at 54.5 or 55.5. I like them to hit that a little bit. Late in the year, they have a very easy schedule, too. So if they rest guys down the stretch, they should still be able to win a lot of games late and kind of pad that number. Playoffs, I'm very confident in saying they're going to the conference finals. With how Philly kind of looms as a threat, but with how good Boston projects to be, I'm not willing to call that more than, kind of a coin flip, and it might even be weighted toward Boston right now. But there's going to be a lot of Raptors people listening to this podcast, so I'm going to say they go to the NBA Finals. But I think it's going to be really, really close between them and Boston. And I think Boston has probably a regular season edge and ends up with home court if that series goes down. I think 57 wins and a pretty good shot at least going to the conference finals and maybe making the first finals in franchise history.
I'm still really torn between them and Boston. I will give my final pick of who I expect to make the NBA Finals on our season preview show, which will be next week. But I am going to pick them for 58 wins. And
whoa, I think this is the first time you've ever gone higher than me.
That's possible. I mean, but, and we've kind of alternated who is right. they've exceeded expectations, I think, every year. So maybe you've always been right.
I think I shot.
Let me see.
Yeah.
Last year. Oh, shoot. I didn't write it down. Hold on. That's best case, worst case. Let me see what we had last year.
I really undershot them last year.
Yeah. Well, we all did, to be sure. So last year, hold on a second here. I'm still stuck on this year. You had them for 48 wins. And I had them for 46.
Oops.
And your best case scenario was 55, and mine was 53. So we were not correct last year. Although we probably would have been correct in terms of their playoff fate.
Yeah, they certainly played like a high 40s win team come playoff time.
How about this year? I mean, best case scenario for me is, probably 63 wins. People have been talking about this with the Spurs of look at how they were last year. And then they added DeRozan to this team. Well, actually, they're not the same team, especially with this DeJounte Murray news. But the Raptors, that analysis actually works a lot better for them. They won 59 with DeRozan last year. And, Poeltl is good, but I don't think they're going to miss him too much due to the depth that they have. And now they replaced DeRozan, who's, maybe the 20th best player in the league, with Kawhi, who could be, maybe even the best player in the league. I picked him for MVP before his injury concerns surfaced last year. So, I mean, this could, to me, be, easily a top five offense and defense in the NBA.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think the best case scenario for them not only includes low to mid-60s wins, it also probably includes a Kawhi Leonard MVP. And I know you can't assume that he's going to be back to that level, but if he's somewhere close to it, it's really not hard to squint and see where Durant and Curry cannibalize each other's votes. The Lakers aren't that good. Giannis doesn't quite take the leap, and Kawhi is the favorite for MVP. If you're the Raptors, probably don't have a chance to win the NBA championship. So if you're talking best case scenarios, it probably also includes making a really strong basketball case for retaining Leonard. And I think him being in the MVP discussion and the team making a finals run would go a long way to making to selling the basketball case for Leonard to stay. And I think, obviously they'd love to go to the finals and win as many games as possible. Longer term, in terms of this franchise's chances of winning a championship in the next few years, retaining Leonard would be a big part of that. So the closer they can come to the regular season best case scenario, particularly with Leonard's own individual performance and happiness, is it probably shoots their longer term projection higher too.
I disagree with you. I think they actually could win the championship.
Really?
More so because people are just, are you saying that just because you think Golden State's invincible?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess their injuries happen and things like that, but it's hard for me to picture a scenario where Golden State State isn't a heavy favorite in an NBA Finals matchup.
Yeah, if they get there. I mean, I don't think, you know, during the regular season, I think they could have kind of a rough time of it. I mean, they just have a lot of structural weaknesses of it. But a lot of it just comes, like, Draymond Green has this knee soreness early on. You know, his aging, I think, is going to be a key variable for them. Can he turn it up defensively in the playoffs? I mean, I think Golden State would be a favorite against the Raptors, but I think, you know, they definitely could have some injury concerns. You know, if Durant or Curry or Green, you know, I don't think Thompson is necessarily a candidate for this, but, you know, any of those guys could take a little bit of a step back. They don't have a ton of depth. Andre Iguodala, we saw them struggle without him. You know, maybe he just won't be healthy. You know, so I think there are definitely plenty. I agree, totally healthy. You know, everyone playing at the same level as last year, sure, they're a massive favorite. But, you know, I think people are treating that as much more of a given than I would be. And, you know, so take that for all of you who are like, oh, you live in the Bay Area.
Even more excited because, you know, you have to temper your own expectations a little bit. And, like, I don't know. I would love to be for that to be accurate and me to get to spend some time in the Bay Area in June and find out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll take you to some good restaurants. I think, you know, so best case, you're thinking, you know, kind of low 60s and wins as well.
Yeah. And I think the best case includes Kawhi Leonard winning an MVP, which, you know, is maybe not the be all and end all in terms of recruiting him to stay, but it probably doesn't hurt.
Yeah. No, and most of the other places that he's going to go, maybe the Clippers, he would probably still be the best guy. But, you know, if he goes to the Lakers, that seems unlikely. Worst case, I mean, I think for this one, usually I say, oh, well, you know, don't assume that somebody misses a ton of time. But Kawhi Leonard played 9 games last season.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, when you build in a realistic worst case scenario, him not playing a lot of games is certainly, you know, I could see him missing half the year very easily. That is part of this scenario to me. Now, even without DeRozan and with all these other guys, like, a lot of times they didn't miss a beat. I think that, you know, some of the stat heads might go a little bit too far sometimes in dismissing DeRozan's impact.
Yeah, that's,
you
know, a lot of possessions to just assume you can give one here and one there at the same efficiency. But
yeah, and it's worth noting too. A lot of teams too, you know, you say DeRozan struggled to score against the best defenses. Well, a lot of teams just didn't have an answer for DeMar DeRozan. You know, that's, I mean, that's something that, you know, and he would get to the foul line with all of his tricks against young guys and that kind of stuff.
Ask poor Chris Middleton.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I'd probably have, like, call it 45 is the worst case scenario. But I mean, I still think they're going to really defend, though. So
yeah,
maybe even I would say 47.
Yeah, 45 is the number I had in my head, probably just because it's a round number.
Nice... And we know how accurate these projections are. So.
Yes, this is all very
really
scientific.
Every possible realistic scenario is encompassed in these best case, worst case.
I just ran one simulation in my head and it spit out 45 wins.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think the point there is that, like, even in the worst case scenario, the Raptors are still a playoff team that defends really well.
Oh yeah.
They just maybe struggle with that individual offense creation.
Yeah, I mean, it would take really almost 3 big injuries, I think, for them to really, you know, just start to fall down to, like, you know, a 500 team or so.
Yeah.
Well, all right, this was awesome. Let everyone know where they can keep up with your work before we go.
My work will only be at The Athletic Toronto this year, and you can find me on Twitter at BlakeMurphyODC. And that's pretty much it. Usually I have a lot more stuff to plug, but this year is going to be a little different.
Yeah, it's nice that things are a little simpler for you. We'll have to do another pod at some point. What are you doing podcast-wise these days?
So Eric, Kareen, and I have one at The Athletic that is roughly once a week, and then I'll still hop on the old Raptors Republic podcast every so often with William Liu and catch up there.
All right. Well, I'd be glad to return the favor with my own guest appearance, although inviting yourself onto someone's podcast is bad etiquette, by the way.
No, I would love to have you, especially
who's listening, but
especially as we near a you know, whenever the Raptors overlap with the Warriors. I forget when on the schedule the Warriors games are, but
oh man, those are going to be massive games. I really hope Kawhi is healthy and the Warriors guys are healthy for those games, because even if we don't see it in the finals, it would just be a fascinating regular season
matchup. Yeah, and they've played such fun games against each other the last couple years. The Warriors always win, but you know, they're usually like 5-6 point games, so it should be a lot of fun.
All right, man. Well, thanks again for doing this, and looking forward to the start of the season.
Thanks so much for having me on, Nate.